Talk Shoe.
Recorded live.
Okay, guys, we're back. Sorry about that. My internet crashed again, and this is, again, getting very frustrating. I don't know what the hell is going on. But this is part two, so I think you'll probably have to skip the last 5 minutes or so. There's probably some dead air there at the end of the first edition of this. But anyways, we're back. This is part two with Tom in Connecticut. We'll finish up here probably in the next 30, 45 minutes. And we were talking about worldviews and psychological warfare. And I wanted to mention, if you go over to john-friend.net and look at the post for this program, you'll see a link to Psychological Operations / Warfare, A History of PSYOP by Major Ed Rouse. And he kind of gives an overview of what psychological operations are. And he specifically talks about how they're concerned with attacking the worldview and the very perception of reality of the target audience. It's about influencing human attitudes and behavior. And we've talked about this document on previous shows, but I just wanted to mention this. This is what it's all about. And Tom, you had mentioned how historical narratives are used in psychological operations against us and how our history has been distorted, and that's absolutely right. And there's also another aspect to this, and that's this overall critique of our culture and the distortion of our culture by radical Jewish intellectuals and activists and whatnot. And this is, again, outlined in great detail by Dr. Kevin MacDonald in his book, Culture of Critique. So there's two aspects of it. There's not only the historical narrative aspect that's been systematically used against us, but there's also sort of the cultural and social aspect as well. And then, of course, we know our economy has been subverted, our political system has been subverted. So there's many aspects to this.
There are. The one thing I'd like to mention real quick is, on the subject of worldview, there was a guy by the name of Jacob Grimm who lived between 1785 and 1863. In 1835, he published a 4-volume encyclopedia of German myths. It was called German mythology. In there, among other things, he claimed that Christianity, destroyed and thus deprived the Germans of both their three-pronged identity that was comprised of land, myth, nation, and the original German culture. He wrote very emotional accounts related to this topic, and he received a very wide readership. One of his big supporters was a guy named Richard Wagner, who lived between 1813 and 1883. He was the famous composer. And you'll see that that Grimm, this is the same guy that wrote Grimm's fairy tales. He had a brother. I don't know how many of you guys are familiar with Grimm's fairy tales. I grew up reading them and having it read to me as a kid. Mm-hmm. Basically, they embody morality, and there's also mythology in there that, believe it or not, supports a worldview. And that is what that was all about, which is why these Jewish usurpers hate Jacob Grimm so much, and also Richard Wagner.
That's right. Yep.
So if you really want to know, Hitler and his contemporaries were very familiar with Grimm, very familiar with Wagner, and these are some of the reasons why. If you really want to know sort of like where you come from, and you might want to read Grimm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, you also wanted to talk about, I believe, a document relating to how language is used and how, basically this idea of a conspiracy theory. Is that the document that you wanted to talk about as well?
Or
do you want to – yeah, go ahead.
I can go anywhere, but, back to this whole thing about disagreement and back to this whole the consistent attacks that we're receiving – by being called conspiracy theorists.
Yeah.
The term originated with a document 1030-960, which was a CIA internal memo that became publicly available, I think, in 1974 through FOIA, the Freedom of Information Act. And I'll try to pull it up real quick. Give me a moment. But I think it was entitled Countering criticism of the Warren Commission report, okay, something like that, to that effect. And I can read down through it when I get to it, which I don't have it in front of me at the moment. But you'll notice that in the document, it's basically a memo that's put out to, you know what, instead of me trying to just hang on a moment.
I was going to say, is there a link online? That you
I'm sure there is. Document 1030-960. Just find it. It's there. You know, you can find it yourself and read it.
1030-90?
1030-960.
Oh, 960. Let's see.
So help me out with this and then just read it. Basically, if you read through it, it's going to talk in terms of the JFK assassination. If you take you rub out JFK and replace it with Sandy Hook or 9/11, then you'll start to understand what you're dealing with and who you're dealing with.
I think I have it right here, cia.gov/Library Center for the Study of Intelligence. It's taking a minute to, is it relating to the Cuban Missile Crisis?
No, it's related to the JFK.
Okay, this is in it then.
1030-960.
I'm not seeing it.
Are you Googling it?
Yeah, I'm just Googling CIA 1030-960.
Yeah.
I see here, is it the, let's see, the Mary Farrell Foundation? Does that have anything to do with it?
No. You know what? They might be scrubbing this, dude. They could be scrubbing it. I would if I was involved in both.
Let's see. This might be yeah. But anyways, you say how they specifically, you know, use this term to discredit anybody trying to criticize or critique.
Well, that was the genesis of the term. Yeah, the genesis of the term.
Tom, you're cut.
Conspiracy theorists came through the dissemination.
Sorry, yeah, you're cutting out again. It came through this document, this idea of calling everybody a conspiracy theorist.
That's right. That's
right. And you see the same tactics used with Sandy Hook and 9/11. And it's really had a very negative impact on our dialogue and on, you know, how we communicate. Because think about it, most people, you're a conspiracy theorist. It's just a label thrown out there to keep people.
Like
racist, exactly. There's a ton of these buzzwords that are used to circumvent the actual critical thinking process and just, you know, label somebody a kook or whatever without actually investigating what they're saying. And again, as you say, it comes directly from the CIA.
Well, you know, they have smart people who study human behavior. And all. CIA document 1030. Okay, wait a minute. I'm reading. Concerning criticism of the Warren Report.
Mm-hmm.
Here it is. I got it in front of me. I don't know why you couldn't find it.
Yeah.
And it actually, it wasn't concerning. I have a copy of it as a PDF. It's countering. Countering is the actual term. And it starts out saying our concern. Okay. From the day of the President Kennedy assassination on, there's been speculation about the responsibility for his murder. Okay. And then it talks about the trend of opinion is a matter of concern to the U.S. government, including our organization. Innuendo of such seriousness affects not only the individual concerned, meaning, you know, members of the Warren Report, but also the whole reputation of the American government. And then it has suggested actions. And here they are. It says, are you still there, John?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay. Suggested actions. We do not recommend that the discussion of the assassination question be initiated where it is not already taking place. Where discussion is active, where discussion is active, addresses are requested, quote, to discuss the publicity problem and with friendly elite contacts, especially politicians and editors, pointing out that the Warren Commission was made, you know, as thorough an investigation as humanly possible, etc., to employ propaganda assets to negate and refute the attacks of its critics. Book reviews and feature articles are particularly appropriate for this purpose. And it goes into how to do that. And, you know, the unclassified attachments so this guidance should provide useful background material for passing to our assets. Our ploy, and they use the term P-L-O-Y, ploy, should point out, as applicable, that the critics are wedded to theories adopted before the evidence is in. They're politically interested. They're financially interested. They're hasty and accurate in their research, and they're infatuated with their own theories. So those are the things that those are kind of like the buzz.
The way to try to discredit anybody.
So guess what? It's doing the exact same thing with 9/11 and also Sandy Hook and these other things.
That's right.
So what would
That's
it try?
Right. It's almost verbatim. You know, it's like literally the exact same tactics.
Of course. Now that right there, I mean, any rational person looking at this is going to go, oh, wait a second.
Yeah,
this isn't cool. But
interesting.
And it goes further. It's quite long. It goes into in private to media discussions, not directed at any particular writer or in attacking publications which may yet be forthcoming. The following arguments should be useful. No significant new evidence has emerged, okay, that the commission did not consider. Critics usually overvalue particular items and ignore others. That's basically, citing cognitive biases, okay? Overvaluation is essentially a cognitive bias. Conspiracy on this larger scale often suggested would be impossible to conceal.
Exactly. Okay, so, that's one that you always hear.
Oh, we know that's true because, you know, the Manhattan Project wasn't concealed, was it?
Yeah, right.
I'll tell you what, it was. It was completely concealed. Mm-hmm. And believe it or not, the way that these things work, the way that security, the security apparatus works, is that projects are heavily compartmentalized so that actors, you know, on various levels are completely unaware of other actors on the same project.
Yeah, exactly. The
that's how we do it. It's part of risk management. You know, should there be a failure over here, we don't want the whole stack of cards to fall down.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, is it possible to conceal? Yes, it is. Very, if you construct the project properly. And I can tell you that when we've applied structured methods of analysis to things like Sandy Hook, Boston, etc., we can show how we know that they use the compartmentalization in the construction of these frauds.
Yeah.
Okay. This isn't me speculating. I can prove it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we can show you how. And maybe I think we're going to have to spend time to actually show people how. I know people are busy. They have jobs. And maybe they haven't had training. That's great. But we can train them. You know, the other thing is this thing called that historically there was Operation Gladio. You know, I don't need to waste time on what that is. You can Google it, read about it. You know, do governments actually kill their own citizens to further the police state? Well, read about Gladio, okay? Yeah, in some cases they do. They do. Mm-hmm. But I think historically maybe I don't want to go into exactly why and all that kind of stuff, sure. But I can tell you that, yes, objectively, this has been done. And, you know, more recently we've found evidence that in addition to, actually carrying out events, they know that they can use digital media to create a fake event and just present it to you as real. So why not do that? You have more control over the event that way.
Exactly. And speaking of that, I have another link for today's post for this program, an article called Information Warfare by Professor George J. Stein. And we've also talked about this document in the past. And I believe this was written – I just clicked on it right now. Give me one second. I think it was written in 1990 – oh, it was 1995, published in Air Power Journal. And I believe this guy, Professor George J. Stein, was with the Army War College. And he talks about information warfare. He defines information warfare. And he talks about its importance and developing effective information warfare and an effective strategy. And he literally talks about the ability to stage events and present them in the media using, digital manipulation or there's all sorts of techniques. And I think there's no doubt that they clearly have this ability to do these things.
We do it all the time, John.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's like, why, like, here's, they're writing about this. They're talking about how effective and how important it is. And what, we just think that they don't really do these things? I mean, come on.
We do. Yeah. That's one of the important, okay, if, you know, when you read about coup d'etat, you know, of a small country, you often, you may think, wow, banana republic's falling. What's usually the first thing that's done? The news transmitters are taken over.
Exactly.
Right?
Yep.
And
that's right.
There's a reason for that. That doesn't just happen by accident. That tends to be the number one target in almost all cases. In a coup d'etat, the first thing you do is you take over the media transmitters, TV stations, etc. What if you can do that just by flying over some territory, flipping a switch from an aircraft, and take it over without actually having to physically take the physical infrastructure on the ground? Guess what? We can do it. We can also do it from satellite-based platforms also. But, this kind of coup d'etat thing doesn't just happen in small countries somewhere that, you can hardly name. Sometimes it's mostly done with the control of a fiat currency and banking system to grab media control. The effect
right.
is the same.
Mm-hmm.
With this, the coup of the entire West is almost entirely complete. Okay? We need to get our act together as far as this is what they've done. They were like, hey, we don't need to use tanks. We can just use money and buy it. Where are you going to get it? Yeah, that's not a problem. I can print it.
Yep.
Okay, that's what they're doing. This is really what's going on.
I think their control of the media and information and our perception of reality is just as important, if not more so, than their control of the money system.
It is. They go hand in hand.
They do go hand in hand, yeah, because without the money, they couldn't have taken over the media.
No.
It's crucial. And think about it. Most people receive every particle of information that the vast majority of people have received have come through a Jewish censor.
Well, how do you know what's actually going on in the neighboring town or neighboring city to you? How do you know? Do you know somebody over there? Wait, what do? You listen to radio or watch TV? Guess what? That whole infrastructure is controlled by somebody.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You can't. See, this is the thing. Why do we assume what we're being told is real? I mean, why don't we investigate it and think critically about it and actually, confirm for ourselves what's real and what's not?
I'll tell you why we don't, because we haven't been trained in structured methods. And also you have to have training and background in that and also in the application of them. What we need to do, you, John, I, and other interested parties, is we need to actually construct the infrastructure for our people to accomplish this. This isn't just going to happen, okay? We're going to have to just do it, whether it's through websites and stuff like that, where we can have people, figure out what's going on by seeing not only, what our conclusions were, but also being able to check our work and applying whether or not and look to see whether we applied rational thought and logic to our conclusions, okay? When you look at news, it's just you're hearing some bullshit, okay? And how do you know that any of this is true? You don't. If you take it on faith. Oh, wait a second, it turns out that this whole, narrative is consistent with, somebody's, agenda. Wow.
Exactly. Yeah. And another thing, especially when it comes to these major events, it's so difficult for a lot of people to really get past it and objectively evaluate what they're being told because of the traumatic nature of these events. Think about, 9/11, Sandy Hook. These are very traumatic events. And so when you combine this with most people already just sort of taking at face value what's in the news, it's very difficult to get past it and actually objectively look at what you're being told.
That's right. And the only way to attack this is through education. We're going to have to educate our people and get them familiar with structured methods and how we can, parse through what is a fact, what isn't a fact, and what's true, what isn't true. You can't just do this, just shooting from the hip, okay, with the 06 gun and just go ping and go, wow, I got – no, it's not going to work like that. We actually need to have a decent infrastructure in place where we can get to this. We're going to be definitely going up against resistance against people who don't want us to do this. This brings me back to this whole thing about how to achieve attitude change among our own people who have been had their worldview – systematically attacked, or maybe they just they're basing their opinions on false news, okay, which is really essentially what you're doing if you're allowing the media to come in contact with you. You shouldn't do that. But there's something called a dual process model that describes how attitude change occurs, and that it occurs along two separate paths. One path is the central systematic and conscious route is via careful scrutiny and rational evaluation of a persuasive message, okay, which is how most of us listening to this program, and also John, I know that that's how his brain works. He wants a rational argument and, you know, with a fact pattern he can check. The other process, the second process, is a peripheral sort of heuristic or subconscious route. It's sort of like a rule of thumb methodology that relies on quick judgments that allow a person to reach a decision without having to expend considerable mental effort on the analysis. And that's where the emotional aspect of things comes in. And if we wanted, you know, this should help you understand how you've been attacked, because the enemy will attack you along this dual process model. You know, certain people are more susceptible to the rational side of things, and certain people are way more susceptible to the emotional side of things. It turns out that the bulk of people are.
Yes, yes, that's right. Yeah,
so
most people definitely not.
Methods. Yeah, we can use the same methods not against our people, but for our people. So what I'm saying is we know kind of like where we're going. We want truth. So basically is what we don't just want to, profess a position, you know, it's like, this is good for me. I want to know what's real and what's actually true. And fortunately for us, our enemies, they've built their house on sand, and they don't value truth. In fact, the truth of the matter will completely undermine them, and they know it. In the long term, I don't think that they're going to stand.
Yep, that's right.
I don't think you can. You just can't. And I know that they don't think so either, which is one of the reasons why they're doing the things they're doing. They know that, you know, certain members of our society are actually, you know, able to figure out what a fact is and get through that stuff. So if you notice, they've got the immigration door wide open, and it's not, you know, coming from Iceland, okay? No, dude, we have a problem here. Those people don't give a crap about what's true. They just care about what they could get.
Yeah.
The truth is
irrelevant to them.
Well, I don't think it is. I mean, they're coming from, you know, dire straits. Why? Because the country of origin sucks. Why? Because they were there. That's what they created. Okay? So they want to come somewhere else where it's better. And, you know, that's just it. Okay, so, and I'll tell you what, we're on a sinking ship. This isn't going to get better. It's going to get worse. We need to start doing something. Time to
do
it.
I agree. Well, I certainly think that we're fighting back with some of these radio programs we're doing. And, you know, I mean, we got to start somewhere, that's for sure. And
understanding the nature of disagreement, and, you know, I probably didn't do a very good job. I was working through, you know, a bunch of papers, a bunch of like experiments that were done, and trying to like, you know, get through that stuff and translate it into conversational, you know, just prose, right? It's not that easy to do. But long story short, the gist of it is to understand that most human disagreement is not based on rational, factual analysis.
That's right.
You need to know.
That's true, and that's been demonstrated in my personal life for sure.
Well, if you're going to talk to anybody about anything important, okay, you need to know that and get that other person to agree with you on that level, and then also put some rules on the table, okay? This is how we're going to discuss this subject. It's going to be done this way, not just a bunch of bullshit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay? Not just because, you know, you're defending your positions. You need to have... And if you can't do that, if you can't even agree on what rules are going to be applied, then, you know, start shooting, I guess. You know?
Yeah, it's kind of pointless, yeah.
It's completely pointless to even talk to them. It's completely pointless. Oh, this other thing that you...
Oh, so Tom...
wanted to mention was Cat Sunstein and his strategies...
Oh yeah, sorry. Yeah, sorry. You were cutting out there a little bit. Yeah, yeah. I heard you say Cast Unseen. And I have the paper pulled up right here. I wanted to bring this up. He's the guy. I'm sure most.
Yeah, you need to do that. He's a strategist. Okay.
Yeah, he's the guy who wrote about conspiracy theories and how the government needed to infiltrate and undermine conspiracy theorists and groups and whatnot. And I have a paper pulled up here, and it's linked on this post for our show here today. It's called The Law of Group Polarization. and Cass R. Sunstein wrote this in December 1999 for the Harvard. I believe he was with the Harvard Law School, and he wrote it for the University of Chicago Law School.
Yeah.
And of course, Cass R. Sunstein is, I mean, if he's not a dual Israeli-American citizen, he's obviously a Jew, and he's coming from this particular perspective. But in let me just read the abstract real quick, and then we can comment on it. And again, this is called The Law of Group Polarization, and he says, and this kind of relates to what we were talking about with disagreements, and he says, in a striking empirical regularity, deliberation tends to move groups and individuals who compose them toward a more extreme point in the direction indicated by their own pre-deliberation judgments. For example, people who are opposed to the minimum wage are likely, after talking to each other, to be still more opposed. People who tend to support gun control are likely, after discussion, to support gun control with considerable enthusiasm. People who believe that global warming is a serious problem are likely, after discussion, to insist on severe measures to prevent global warming. This general phenomenon, group polarization, has many implications for economic, political, and legal institutions. It helps to explain extremism, radicalization, cultural shifts, and the behavior of political parties and religious organizations. It is closely connected to current concerns about the consequences of the internet. It also helps account for feuds, ethnic antagonism, and tribalism. Group polarization bears on the conduct of government institutions, including juries, legislatures, courts, and regulatory commissions. There are interesting relationships between group polarization and social cascades, both informational and reputational. Normative implications are discussed with special attention to political and legal institutions. And you can download this paper actually from the link that I provided. And you can also download his paper on conspiracy theories, which may be something we should talk about in the future, specifically talk about that paper. But this is an interesting abstract here. And I read a little bit of it. I haven't read the entire paper. But basically what I gather is that Cass Sunstein and the people he works for do not want our message from, you know, forming and developing into a larger group. And essentially he's working to disrupt and cause confusion groups, basically. That's what this is all about. Is that
exactly? Yeah, exactly. The way the paper is written, it's sort of written as a scholarly attempt at, you know, explaining phenomenon, but the underlying gist of it is that, you know, somebody reading the paper and saying, okay, I'm operating a fiat money system and I'm worried about the sheeple waking up and unseating my gravy train. What do I do about that? Well, Cass Sunstein has said that human psychology works this way. If you allow people who are similarly like-minded to continue to deliberate among themselves, they will eventually perfect their message.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? This is just what will happen. And he's talking in terms of extremism. Here's an example of extremism. If you go out into the general public and you have a piece of paper and you write down a question, let's say it's a mathematical problem that's a calculus problem, okay, where you have to calculate the area under a curve, all right? And you hand that out to 50 people randomly on the street. How many of them do you think are even going to know how to approach that? And how many of them do you think are going to arrive at the right answer? I will tell you right now that if you do that randomly, you're going to run into a situation where most people have no idea how to approach it. A few will kind of struggle through and they'll get the wrong answer, and maybe one or two will get the right answer. The people who got the right answer in that group are extremists.
Yes.
You follow what I'm getting at? They're in the minority. So isn't that interesting? So, and what happens?
And basically, they can't let these extremist groups from forming and you know, actually.
Well, let me go back to that. Okay, let's say you have those 50 people that we brought into a room. Okay, and we have them all liberating about calculus. And we have these two guys or three guys that know calculus, and they're able to get up in front of the group and explain how calculus works and explain this whole thing about calculating the area under a curve and how they can do it and how we know what the answer was. Eventually, what's going to happen is the entire group is going to agree on how calculus works. Do you get me?
Yeah.
That's what they're afraid of.
Exactly, yeah.
So that's when you read Castensky's paper, he's not going to describe it the same way I will. He's going to describe it as a threat to the social order.
Exactly, yeah. That's what it's all about, yeah, how it threatens. Yeah, how it threatens the system.
That's right.
Well, I mean, he even says it has, you know, it has very important consequences or implications for the government, for the economic system and whatnot. So,
well, of course, the economic system and this whole thing is fiat money bullshit.
Yeah.
I mean, we can explain how that works. I mean, we should do a show exactly on how the Fed works. The fiat money system is not – the problem is not confined to the fiat money printing system. That is only a portion of the theft. The whole practice of charging interest for the use of money is so problematic. It, mathematically speaking, the lender will wind up owning the entire value of the entire world. It's just a matter of time. This problem is also – tentacles lead directly into the modern-day rendition of the stock market, something that – Adolf Hitler completely pulled down and restructured in Germany because of the fundamental nature of having people who are not interested, who have no interest in a physical area, let's say a town where a factory is located and the jobs and the lives and the kids and all that. Why would you let an outsider own that factory? Okay? What they're going to wind up doing is optimizing for themselves to maximize the profits. That's where you get offshoring.
Yep.
This is just a natural progression of that kind of rape, that kind of national rape. I mean, when it comes down, Adolf Hitler talked about things like, well, you know, what comes from a nation? Okay, what springs forth from that? Let's say I'm driving a car down the street. Okay, did I make that car? Did I conceptualize the internal combustion engine? Did I do it? No. Okay, that all came from the creative powers of the nation.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't want to just have a third party come in and be able to sell that off to the entire world for their benefit. And that's basically what this system does. And the problem actually goes even further into this thing called the foreign exchange market, or Forex. And you can Google what that is, Forex. And what you have is an international exchange of money, of money. So, and you'll see that there are different currencies tend to have different valuations, and it's very interesting how that works and how the dynamics operate. Where country A will have, let's say the dollar is worth, this much versus the pound, okay? And what happens is these central banks who are all in on this stuff do currency swaps where they'll move currency, they'll just trade it. They'll say, well, I'll just trade to England or whoever. I'll just move a bunch of money over there, and you give me pounds, and then I'll at the end of the month I'm going to change the exchange rate back, and then we'll do another swap, and I just double my money.
It's all such a scam, man.
I think we need to draw a picture. If I have to do a video on that, I will. But it's so bad, okay? It's so basic. It's so so criminal that if you show it in terms that people can understand, man, they're going to get pissed off.
Exactly. And Castensky certainly – and he's doing everything he can to prevent this from happening.
Absolutely.
That's what this is all about.
Prevent the cascade of awareness.
Yeah. How do you see these tactics playing out in the real world?
I see that the way it really works is, as we mentioned, there's the conflicts, the spectrum of conflict. You have information all the way on sort of the left side, and open warfare, bombs and bullets all the way on the right side, okay? Mm-hmm. I see a ratcheting up of the information warfare, and if that doesn't work, you're going to see more physical oppression. And if that doesn't work, the gloves are going to start to come off. This is just how this works. People need to understand that that's what's going on, okay? We have a problem in that the controllers of this this country are dual citizens, and they've taken the oath of allegiance to another country with a different flag. They're working for themselves.
Enemy agents, totally control.
Well, I mean, are they quote unquote legally defined? Is that no? Because they get to define that stuff.
Yeah.
The law books, okay?
But they absolutely are the enemy of.
Why do you think they want to disarm you?
Yeah. You know, and this is another thing I wanted to bring up. These psyops and these, you know, very poorly done, you know, these events that are presented in the media, and we're supposed to believe that they're actually real, like Sandy Hook and some of these other shootings, you know, the Boston bombing, even 9/11. I mean, it almost seems like they design these operations in a way that's so sloppy that it's just meant to confuse everybody. And that's almost a part of the strategy, too, to where everybody's arguing over this and arguing over that.
It is, actually. If we could go back into that, if you want to talk, we could do a whole show on what those strategies are. One of that is the confusion principle and also overload principle.
Yes, that's right.
You know, you can, hey, listen, there's classes on this stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's amazing.
Deception. I mean, I could teach one.
Yeah.
And you know what? Maybe we need to do that.
Yeah, in these operations, it's almost like they're designed just to, like you said, cause confusion and really just to drive everybody crazy, you know?
What it's designed to really do, the effect on the target audiences are calculated. They know that certain people with certain worldviews that are, you know, let's say older people or whatever, okay, flag wavers, okay, I don't know how many there actually are. They're going to be extremely resistant to believing that the government could lie to them on this level, okay?
Yeah.
And it's gonna, and younger kid in the same household might go, hey, wait a second, you know, I'm like, this is bullshit. And that right there is gonna drive those two groups apart further.
Yeah.
And we've already discussed the dynamics of how that works. This is predictable. Now, there are ways to mitigate that, understanding how human behavior works and what worldviews are made of. And all of that, if there are ways to try to mitigate that. Going back to this dual process model of how attitude change occurred, the one is the systematic conscious route, where you're using careful scrutiny of rational evaluation of the persuasive message, okay? And the other one is essentially emotional.
And we're doing the first one that you described.
Yes.
Yeah. I wish I was good at the second.
we can totally do it, and I think you're going to have to start doing that. To draw people in to taking a look, we're going to actually, unfortunately, have to trick them into waking up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, part of it, there's ways of doing that. Unfortunately, it's part of the human condition. I mean, you just, most people, how far did most people go in school anyway? And how well did they do? You know, I mean, frankly, you know, come on, walk out on the street, take 10 people and ask them, and if they give you honest answers, you're going to be kind of like sadly disappointed on what you hear. There aren't that many PhDs walking around that you come in contact with. There just aren't. And the ones that are, you know, they have their joint at the hip with the academic infrastructure, and they know that if they say the wrong thing, guess what? They're gone.
Right.
And we're
right
back to one again. So, we have, you know, it's funny that Adolf Hitler and his contemporaries knew all about this stuff, and they figured out a way around it, and they actually did something. I think it's possible. And the way that people's brains work, you know, it turns out that a certain subgroup of the population has a very high incidence of psychopathic behavior compared to a white mean. Okay, the most white people of European descent have, let's say they have, you know, occurrences of X levels of psychopathy in the population. Well, there are other groups that other racial groups that have that in much higher proportions. Okay, and you know, we can argue whether or not that's due to the fact that we haven't given them enough free stuff, or whether or not it has to do with the way they are. I happen to think it's pretty much the way they are, you know, that you're born a certain way and that physical attributes are genetically coded. And guess what? If there's differences in the outward physical characteristics of somebody, then doesn't it follow that there's differences in the inward physical characteristics of the brain, and that those physical characteristics might influence behavior or intelligence the same way it does in dogs and every other animal?
Yes. But see, yeah, that's right. And it's so obvious, but we're deceived into thinking otherwise.
You know what? If you think that, then you're a moron, because, you know, what they do is they use this emotional thing. They throw the emotional appeal at you. Oh, you know, we have to help all the starving people, and show a picture of a kid with a fly in his head who can't be. Oh, that's your problem. You know, we have to give them free stuff. Okay. Yeah, sure. Okay. The problem is, I mean, let's say you feed them. You're not teaching them how to feed themselves. Now you got a parasite.
Yeah.
But again, we have this other group of dual citizen usurpers who know this. They use it, you know, they're using it because it's actually kind of interesting how they orchestrate this whole process. You know, and I think it's starting to fall apart big time, because we were able to send our message out, and it does resonate among the smarter people who are able to think, and who are also in the first group of the due process model, the people who use the conscious, careful scrutiny and rational approach versus the oh my gosh, I want to feel good about myself, you know, kind of people.
Those are
kinds of people. Unfortunately, a lot of women are that way, which is back to why, you know, strategy wise, knowing that, okay, you've got these white people, these white guys who are pretty much, you know, first, the dual process model thinkers, okay, they're not emotional. And then you have their significant others who are really, you know, fuzzy and just like, oh, I want to, you know, be, you know, I'm emotional. Well, so what they've done is they've driven a wedge between those two, and they've exploited, they've used that wedge, you know, between men and women to, you know, empower the emotional people, and then to send emotional messages to those people who can then vote.
Yeah, and this kind of gets into what Sophie and I were talking about yesterday.
Yeah, it does. So, you know, we know all this. We know all this, great. What we need to do, and reading all these papers and understanding how group dynamics work, and also how just what the landscape is, what we need to do is we need to talk to our people, not to other groups. Out groups that are self-interested as parasites are not going to listen to you. They might seem like they are or whatever. Maybe they just want to know what you're doing because they're worried about, you know, they're getting free stuff on a continual basis from you. We need to stop. What I would suggest is to focus more on our in-group, on teaching them how these things are done, and also bolstering their worldview in ways that are not corrupted by the enemy.
Yep, I agree. I totally agree.
That's what we have to do. There is no other way. And knowing how the enemy has attacked us and the systematic methodology that they've used, I mean, we just essentially laid it out.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. I mean, we've pretty much laid out most of this stuff, although we keep getting interrupted by my Skype connection.
That's okay. We've basically laid it out. So you know that when you're talking about, you know, 9/11, the planes and all that stuff, if you get, you know, you're going to deal with a set of disagreements coming from somebody. Okay. What you need to know, if you're going to waste your time discussing this stuff with people that are in your group, okay, they're in what you perceive as to be your in group, you need to first have a talk with them about what the rules are going to be in this discussion. And also, you know, maybe explore both of your worldviews. Okay. Both of your priors, your prior assumptions, your prior beliefs. Okay, maybe one of you isn't really that knowledgeable about, you know, how the advanced state of digital technology and how real this stuff is and how this actually can be done, or maybe they are, okay, and those kinds of things, and then go from there, you know. But you know, just shooting from the hip and saying, you know, what I've seen in this quote unquote online and of these various people, I'm not even going to mention who they are. I've seen a lot of evidence of agents who are probably being paid to just subvert, and I've also seen flat out stupid people.
Yeah. that's a good way of putting it, kind of harsh way of putting it, but
well, believe it or not, there are certain disciplines, you know, that take a while to learn. And one of them is under, let's say, I'm just going to use information warfare, to become an expert in that area. You need to learn all, you look at the coursework and stuff. It starts with things like you have to read all, you know, about him and what his ideas were about power and maintaining power. You have to read about human psychology and about this whole thing, of the idea of worldview and the why narratives are so central. Because what narratives are the sort of the rule of thumb approach to dealing with stuff. Okay? Now, if I can get into your head and create a total bogus worldview to you at a level where you're a kid and just say, oh, all white people are evil, they just, you know, victimized everybody, and all those non-whites, they're just noble people of color that are, you know, they're just better, and they're
oppressed by white people.
Yeah, and everything was fine before you arrived there. They were living in wonderful places, and they just would, you know, like pet the animals, and Bambi would come up and lick their hand, and they would only eat the animals if they fell over by a heart attack. They'd never kill them. And, you know, I mean, come on, guys. Bullshit. Okay? The reality was way different. What you need to do is start reading maybe some other read what some other people have said about like, read Scott Van. Okay, and read about the rapes and the raids on our kids and our wives and on the women who were living here, as settlers, and what they did to them. Okay, and think about, gee, wait a second. You know, if I was living back then and I heard, you know, that Farmer Joe, he was murdered and his kids were like, you know, like cut up and stuff, and they took the wife and they, you know, what? I mean, is that going to make me happy? No. Okay, and it wasn't like the interesting thing is that there is a group that the usurpers like to describe the quote-unquote American Indians as one monolithic block, okay, that they were all, like, you know, together, and then it's us against them. Well, that's not the way it was. We're talking about disparate groups of tribal people.
Yep.
And if you, you know, again, I mean, it's not, this isn't Dances with Wolves. I'm sorry, reality is a little different than that. And you need, if you really want to know what happens, you're going to have to do an investigation. But I can tell you flat out that these emotional appeals, for example, Dances with Wolves, all the stupid movies, crazy, you know, that demonize white people and demonize and deify, essentially cavemen. Okay, I mean, what's up with that? I mean, why weren't they if they're so great, why weren't they technologically advanced? Because they don't want to be. You know, I said, I don't buy it. And you know what? When you do warfare with people, you start killing their kids and burning them up, and you might want to consider who's like got a little more technology than you. And you might not, you know. And I'm sorry, I don't have any guilt whatsoever over conflicts that occurred 200 years ago when I wasn't around. But I'm not going to carry that guilt. You know, another thing is, okay, guess what? We have a situation today where there's murders perpetrated, interracial murders with racial intent. We know that. I mean, how should I handle that? How should I handle, you know, those situations? Should they be handled on the spot with the application of the rule of law, or should we just make broad brush, you know, attacks on entire groups based on what one individual did or didn't do, you know? And, you know, I know where we're going with that, because this whole Western concept of justice doesn't allow that, does it?
Mm-hmm.
But not everybody thinks the same way. It goes to worldview. Some people think that there is this thing, is, you know, that we should do that, or it should be done, or, you know, whatever. Okay, I don't, but and I just want to know what's true. That's where I'm coming from. I know that John does. That's where he's coming from. It's one of the reasons why we see eye to eye on things. You know, you have to be able to. I personally had a lot of, I had a bitter pill to swallow, because my worldview was significantly altered once 9/11 occurred and I started investigating. And that
me too. Yeah.
The Nuremberg trials. Okay, I read the whole accounts of Nuremberg, the tribunals, and how those were carried out. That was nothing but a kangaroo court and a total travesty of justice. It was what they should have done is just executed those people. That would have been more honorable than what they did.
Yeah, the torture and all that.
Execute them. If that's what you're going to do, do it. But to stoop to the levels of deceit, that basically, you know,
it's pretty bad. it's pretty bad.
I can't think of anything worse.
Well, what we're doing down in Guantanamo Bay, or what we used to do, I think it probably still goes on. It's the same thing. It's the same exact thing. You know, we're torturing people to extract politically motivated confessions that fit with the predetermined narrative.
Well, what it comes down to, if you talk to anybody who's been trained in interrogation, and guess what? That's another specialty. They will tell you that if you want the truth, it is not reliable, that torture, physical torture, is unreliable.
It is.
They'll wind up telling you whatever you want them to, just to make it stop.
Exactly.
If you want the truth, there are ways of getting that do not involve those measures. Mm-hmm. If you want somebody just to say something, whatever, you know, something is, you can make them do it. Like, just start cutting their hands off or something.
Exactly. Well, hey, Tom, I got to wrap up here. I'm going to have to run out the door here in about 30 minutes. Did you have any concluding remarks for today's program?
Well, we need to. I may have like not done a very good job on this whole disagreement theory. I think, you know, maybe I can do a better job later. I think the smarter people get what I'm trying to say, and where I'm coming from with that, and what the ways to remedy the problems are, or how to approach it. We need to get more, I think, into these structured methods and actually show step by step how to apply them.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we'll definitely continue to talk about these subjects for sure. And you know, I'd like to do, like I said, I've said this last week, I'd like to do this on a weekly basis, and we have been for the past.
One thing.
Yeah.
View, okay? You have a certain worldview, and you maybe we ought to like actually list what your worldview is, going back to, you know, belief in God. Is truth relative, or is it absolute? You know, those kinds of things, okay? And then take a look at what these dual citizen usurpers' worldviews are, okay? And then compare them.
Yeah.
Then you're going to realize you have an intractable problem.
Yep. Yeah, so we covered a lot of subjects today. And again, sorry about the technical problems. I'd like to get something else worked out. Maybe I'll get back over to Blog Talk Radio, or I don't know. I don't know what's going on with my computer. See, that's the thing. I don't know if it's my computer or my modem or what. I might end up having to call Cox up again and seeing if they can help me out and figure out what's going on here, because I keep getting dropped, or my Skype application will just totally close on me. So I apologize for all the technical problems with today's show. But again, I think we covered a lot of ground, and there's lots of useful information presented in this discussion for sure. So thanks again, Tom. We'll definitely do this again, and I'll be in touch with you later on this week.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Okay, so we'll go ahead and wrap up today. It is Thursday, October 17th, 2013. Next week, I will be interviewing Brother Ryan again next Tuesday at 9 a.m. my time. So that's noon on the East Coast. So stay tuned for that, and I'll probably have some other shows lined up. So be sure to follow it on the TalkShoe page, and I will also post details on Facebook. So thanks again, guys. We will talk to everybody next week.